everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Saturday, December 12th, 2020. A gloomy morning here in Nashville with overnight rain and cloudy skies. However, temperatures are quite mild, so it might end up being a good day for a hike. Yesterday, I sat down to interview my old friend Jeff Berry. Jeff is the executive director of the Tennessee Environmental Council, and he has been on my program one previous occasion. Jeff is quite an energetic fellow and always has something new going on. The focus of our interview is a new program offering by the Environmental Council, a program they are calling the Tennessee Pollinator Program, or Generate Some Buzz. As you will hear, they're trying to encourage people to grow wildflowers so as to support pollinator species like bees, butterflies, and moths. And they have teamed up with the Tennessee Wildlife Resource Agency to provide seed packages and resources to get you started with a small garden wildflower patch. We also have a chance to catch up with Jeff about the status of other initiatives being taken by the Environmental Council. As I said, this is Jeff's second visit to the Mark Fraley Podcast. We recorded an interview with Jeff back in October 2018. And so I hope you'll enjoy my interview today with Jeff Berry. So Jeff Berry, welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you for having me back, Mark. It's good, always good to connect with you and have a conversation.
Jeff, it's fun, and you are one of three people out of about 70 editions of this podcast. You're one of three people that's actually been a return guest.
Hey, wow.
The others really are special. Mike Berkeley. Of course, you know Mike at the Grow Wild Nursery out in Fairview, mm-hmm. and talking about native plants. Mm-hmm. And the other is Mike Butler from the Tennessee Conservation League. I should say the Tennessee Wildlife Federation.
And, exactly.
All of you guys have stuff going on all the time that we need to update and keep everybody aware of. Your organization is critical because you're at the center of everything here in the conservation movement in Tennessee. So welcome back.
Great. Awesome. I appreciate what you have to say.
Jeff, the reason I wanted to get you in here today, because I noticed on your Facebook feed, you're launching a new program about pollinators and pollinator gardens. And I want to get into that in detail. But before we do that, let's put this out there. This week is Tennessee Environmental Council Week in Tennessee, says Governor Lee.
Yeah, exactly. And wow, what a blessing that the governor has declared this in honor of Tennessee Environmental Council's 50th anniversary. We are, as you know, chiseled in the history of Tennessee as an organization in the Bicentennial Mall down there on the Granite, which runs, I don't know, several hundred yards.
Oh, fantastic. And I didn't realize that. So that would be around 1970, 1971?
Correct. Okay. Founded in 1970. I have the charter that has the signature from Tennessee's Secretary of State on December 11th, 1970. So you have good timing, Mark. Today is actually our birthday. Today is our anniversary.
Today. Wow.
Yeah, this is the day.
Well, you know, I first came to Tennessee in 75, and got to know the people at TEC in about 78 or 79. At that time, Ruth Neff was executive director.
Yeah, right. Our first director, inaugural.
Well, yeah. I would have guessed that. And at that time, they were working on a contract with our department, the conservation department, to rewrite the state plan for how it organizes the state parks. It was called the TORAS, Tennessee Outdoor Recreation Area System Plan. And they spent a couple of years on contract doing that. And I got to know the folks in her office very well at that time. So congratulations on 50th. And I know you had a big event last night.
Yeah. Now, what you just said, Mark, I can't let you off the hook, because you may have some aspects of TEC's history that we need to be to gather from you. So we might have to do a podcast with you sometime, Mark, and sort of pick your brain about what you remember, because you were actively involved in Tennessee's conservation efforts for what, decades now? So,
Well,
yeah, that
I
on a side
certainly
note.
would be love to do that. There were was a cast of characters back in those days, and I can certainly name names.
Yeah, well, let's do that. We'll stop this recording when we're done with this podcast, and we will have that conversation. Maybe not
Super,
today, but yeah, in the very near
super,
future. Because,
super.
and I appreciate you bringing that up because in digging around and finding the people that know the story of Tennessee Environmental Council, which we wanted to honor during our 50th anniversary, and we're going to continue doing that throughout our 50th year. So we got a year to celebrate these stories. That's why we want to talk to you about what you remember, so we can build that timeline of what we are involved with and showcase that bit of Tennessee's conservation history. And yes, we did celebrate last night at the bridge building downtown, right on the Cumberland River. And we had live bluegrass. We had two of our board members were hosts or MCs of the event. We had an incredible tech crew that did the whole live stream for us. And we figured out how to do it as we built the program. Kind of uncharted territory. We're doing a live stream with multiple cameras and multiple hosts and all that stuff. So, but it turned out really well. It was well attended, and we raised a good amount of money to support our ongoing work.
Fantastic. Now, you all do an annual fundraising event called the Green Tie Affair, has been done for many years. And
Oh, well, this was the first year in 30 that we could not have that event.
I wondered,
Yeah. Yeah.
this
So
event
we,
maybe
yeah.
took the place of that?
Exactly. When
Okay.
we couldn't do Green Tie back in April, we it was scheduled. We had the zoo reserved for that event, and we said, well, our 50th anniversary is coming up at the end of this year. Let's just put all that energy into doing a special event for our 50th anniversary. And we had a lot of conversations about, do we want to have an in-person event or something remote? And that was 7 or 8 months ago, but we made the call because, not knowing what the future would hold with the pandemic, that we would do it as a remote event, which still requires a few people to be in the room, as you know, but not hundreds of people.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we're listening today, and our guest today is Jeff Berry, who's the Executive Director, Chief Operating Officer of the Tennessee Environmental Council here in Tennessee. And as he's discussing, their organization is 50 years old as of today. And Jeff, I know y'all have a website that people can go to if they want to find out more about your organization. I guess if they just Google Tennessee Environmental Council, that'll get them there.
You'll get right at the top. Yeah.
Super. So
And
today,
today is,
Jeff.
hey, today is Tennessee Environmental Council Day. As you said, the
Yes.
Governor Lee did proclaim this as Tennessee Environmental Council Day today. And so encouraging all residents, everybody, really, to get out and do something positive for the environment. So
That's
again, it's
dynamite.
a well-timed recording of this podcast.
Jeff, I wanted to dig in today and talk a little bit about your pollinator garden initiative. What has happened in the environment that would make such an initiative necessary or important?
Wow, yeah. Well, pollinator insects, which it's funny because we use these words like pollinator and assume that everybody knows what we're talking about. And then you have a conversation with someone, and then you realize, oh, well, not everybody just automatically knows what a pollinator is. And they are the insects, the bees, butterflies, and flies, even moths. They all the ones that fly around and land and on flowers because the food is there for them. And they also reproduce on certain of those flower species. So the insects fly around, land on flowers, and reproduce and survive. And by flying around, as honeybees are one of the most famous of the pollinators. You can see the pollen on their legs, and they gather that pollen, and so they carry it from flower to flower. And so that's part of the reproduction cycle of those plants. Now, why is that important to us? Because we love flowers, right? Well, we also love to eat. And a significant amount of our crops are pollinated by insects. And so the problem on a global scale is that pollinator insects have declined significantly since the 1940s, since the end of World War II, when the emergence of pesticides in the world. And so you look at the charts, you can Google all this stuff, right? And there are all kinds of charts showing that decline of the pollinator species globally. And these are global things that we talk about, global environmental challenges, and it seems like, well, that's too bad, and what can I do about it, right? But there's always something we can do. And that's just our mantra at Tennessee Environmental Council is be the solution. What can I do as an individual that will contribute to at least helping that? And obviously you can stop using pesticides in your garden or on your lawn, but also planting a pollinator garden and actually giving direct benefit to those species that we rely upon.
All right, so what is the gist of the program that you all are inviting people to participate in?
Yeah, we like to get to the gist. It's easy as carving out a little piece of your lawn, a few square feet, as many square feet as you want, and create a little garden instead of in addition to your vegetable garden, I should say. Devote some of that space in your property to, if you have your own home and your own residence and your own land, you can plant pollinator seeds and turn it into a garden. And as simple as that, nature does the rest. And it's important, what I've learned in the process of planting these gardens is to remove the turf, remove the top layer of sod, if you will, because that contains all the seeds of those grasses that if you don't remove it, they'll just grow back and take over. But when you remove that top layer, it's just a couple inches,
right,
then you take that whole seed bank away and replace it with healthy native pollinator seeds that grow unobstructed without weeds, weed-free growth the next growing season. So that's why we guide participants to do it that way.
Yeah, and you take that sod that you've cut off the top layer and put that on your compost pile.
Exactly. It's not
trash. Don't
throw
it away.
No way. No way. We don't want people digging holes in their yard and putting it in the landfill and taking up space somewhere else, right? Makes no sense. I just put it in the corner of my yard and it just turns back into earth somewhere else.
Exactly.
But then we do put a layer. I added a layer of topsoil amendment from, I got mine from Compost Company here in the Nashville area. That way the seeds have a rich, new nutrient-rich base in which to grow.
So Jeff, you did a little video that I watched here a week or two ago. Where can people dial in to see that video? Just go to your Facebook page?
There are a number of ways. Oh, the best place to start and the easiest place is at our website, tectn.org, or just Google Tennessee Environmental Council and you will find it.
Right.
And their Get Involved button at the top of that page will have a drop down with the Generate Some Buzz program. That's what we call our pollinator program, is Generate Some Buzz.
Generate Some Buzz. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's effective in a number of ways because obviously bees buzz, and secondly, generate implies it's up to us to do these. It's an action verb, right? Let's all generate some buzz and help our ecosystem.
You know, people would be surprised where if you plant a flowering something that's flowering.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the remotest place, the bees will find it.
Oh, that's amazing. Exactly. Wow.
We have our friend Mike Berkeley, who we mentioned earlier, has done rooftop gardens. He did one really right in the middle of downtown Nashville several years ago, right at the corner of Church and 8th Street in downtown Nashville. It's about a four-story building there.
Mm-hmm.
And they put some flowering plants up on top of that roof, and you know the bees are there. Even in the remotest places, and you
it's
all
amazing.
Are. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it is that when you just walk around your yard on a day in and day out basis, you don't see butterflies and bees flying around typically. But as soon as you plant that garden and those flowers bloom, all of a sudden, attracts the butterflies and the bees, and they're there and you can see them. And that's the other aspect, is you get the beautiful flowers and the butterflies. And it's a remarkable thing how nature works like that.
So not just any flowering plants are appropriate for a pollinator garden.
Correct. You know, I love my crepe myrtles. I have a couple on my property because they're so beautiful, but and there will be some bees and butterflies, and they're beautiful flowers, but it's not the best food for those bees and butterflies. It will attract some, but you plant a native flower that is historically here in Tennessee or the Southeast region. And it, you will see the difference. It's robust. There's all kinds of things that come that are attracted by those. And so we have designed with, in partnership with TWRA, four different mixes of those specific seed mixes, depending on what kind of pollinators you want to attract. And we even have one of my favorites that I've yet to plant is the hummingbird mix. So if you love hummingbirds, who doesn't, right?
Right.
You could do your hummingbird feeder with glass and sugar water, or you can plant these this hummingbird seed mix, and it'll the flowers that attract hummingbirds will grow, and you have instant natural hummingbird attractors in your yard.
So but you're working with you mentioned TWRA, that's the Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency,
right?
And so you have four different combinations of seeds. Is that what you said?
We do, and okay. There's limitless combinations of right. seeds. But we decided to come up with ones that would be most beneficial to the people that would participate, as well as the ecosystem. And because, so we have one that's just a general southern pollinator conservation mix, so it'll attract a nice mix of native local pollinators. The hummingbird mix, which will attract hummingbirds, honey bees, and southern monarch habitat.
Okay.
And the monarch is another one of those endangered or threatened species. So the monarch mix is another important one. But yeah, it depends on what you want to see. And it, and of course, you could plant all four. There's no reason you can, you only sure. have to plant just one. If you have the room, we encourage you to plant four and just see how they different wildlife species are attracted by those different gardens.
So you all are, what is the overall goal for your program? In terms of participation?
Well, ultimately, the vision is why not have pollinator gardens in every property, right? Driving down the street next to, as part of our landscape, there's flowers and butterflies everywhere. That's the ultimate goal.
Right.
And think of how rich our ecosystem would be and how much we would benefit from that. But for the next year, we'd like to see 500 people sign up and plant those gardens, which would if that's at 50 square feet per participant, which is not much, it's a pretty small garden, 10 feet by 5 feet, that would be 10,000 square feet of pollinator habitat in Tennessee. And it's not so much that that's, I mean, 10,000 square feet, their house is bigger than that in Nashville, but the getting people involved in the effort and having those dispersed throughout Tennessee and growing over time, we don't, that's not the end goal. The end goal is that vision of just everywhere we have a rich ecosystem. And we do have this partnership with Tennessee Valley Authority as well, and the Natural Resources Conservation Service both help provide funding for this program to where we can do much bigger, much larger acreage in partnership with TVA under their rights of way. I imagine all those power lines out there where you can't grow trees beneath them, but you could grow flowers. And
right.
instead of just spraying with pesticides all the time, there could be a value to that space that currently is just treated to not grow anything. There's I don't know how many acres, but it's significant. You think of all the power lines in Tennessee, I don't know how many miles, it's thousands of miles of power line right of ways.
You know, it's significant, and there are groups that are also encouraging TVA to allow native grasslands to reemerge in those areas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Southern, the Southeast Grasslands Initiative is based
right.
out of Clarksville, right. Austin Peay, is creating these prairie plots, which is another beneficial use, and they are beneficial to pollinators as well. And all of these efforts, and Tennessee Wildlife Federation also has a pollinator habitat program that people can get certified at their homes. So there are many programs, and we just felt it's important that we create something that's really easy for people to do at home right now without having to go through an extensive process. All you got to do is sign up, get your seeds, and plant your garden, and boom, you're part of the solution that way.
So the ideal time to obtain those seeds would be any time right now. And then to plant them would be what? Do we wait till the last frost, or do we get some out now?
Interestingly, actually, now is a great time to plant And I need to listen and talk to the biologist again that created these seeds for us, because she did say that it's even better to plant them now through March, or at least, I mean, anytime through April is good right. to plant them. But if you plant them now, when the winter is still coming, there's a beneficial process that the seeds go through where they're in the soil. They actually freeze when it gets frozen,
right?
And then they thaw out, and they might do that several times throughout the season. But that's good for the seeds. It makes the plant stronger and more, and it makes a healthier garden in the long run.
Right. That's
so called, yeah. You can plant anything.
That's called stratification.
Tell us about it, Mark. I want to know.
Many of the seeds from these plants have a very hard kernel on the outside of them. Mm-hmm. And so that kernel will be broken down by the freeze and thaw throughout the wintertime. Now you can, and then they'll be ready to germinate when spring comes. You can replicate that process by putting the seeds in the refrigerator or freezer, mm-hmm. In the right way. You've got to put them in moss and peat moss or whatever to keep them a little bit moist. But yes, so now would be a good time to sow seeds. In fact, I have sown some native grass seeds in my propagation plot just 2 weeks ago. But then they're going to look like they're dormant for most of the wintertime.
Yep, exactly.
But they'll come back alive.
And that's it. They will be there all winter not doing anything, but they are doing something. Like you said, that process is taking place.
Right.
And then come spring, they will be the first things to pop out of the ground, and the earliest ones to bloom because Super. You planted them early. Yeah. And the other benefit is they get rain all winter long, right?
Exactly. So
they're nice and moist and they're ready to go.
Exactly. So is there a cost involved in doing this?
We do ask for a donation when you sign up. Because it helps cover those costs. You know, with the seed packets plus shipping alone is about $20 worth of supplies right there.
Okay.
So we ask for a donation, and you could donate whatever you want on the website.
Okay.
If you can't afford it, we actually also have an option. If you want to apply for a scholarship, you can click a link and tell us your circumstances and why you want to plant the garden, why you want to participate, and we can still ship those out to you.
So would this be a good project for a school group or at a school?
I think so. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we actually are working with the School for Science and Math at Vanderbilt. We have a partnership with that group, which is some high achieving high school students, high school seniors, and they're going to be creating a curriculum for schools to be able to take this program and to have a module they go through where they learn through the process of planting those gardens on the school premises.
So I'm listening to my neighbor as we are talking here. I don't know if you can hear this, Jeff, but
yeah, it's very subtle in the background, but it's not distracting.
I've got the leaf blower going in the background of my neighbor clearing his roof from leaves.
Oh yeah. So I've done that. That's the one beneficial use of a leaf blower, I would say, is to clear the gutters.
Well, that's true. I mean, they have their use, but I would encourage people to gather the leaves that they have in their yards. If you can't simply leave them be, which is the best approach, to gather them and compost them, and because they're beneficial to the pollinators that we've been talking about, and to the birds, and they're certainly not something that should be wasted. They're a valuable resource. So
they are. They're full of nutrients and carbon, and which all help the soil. My yard is still unraked. When I get around to it, I probably will mulch them back in using a mulching mower.
Exactly.
But no need to throw those in the landfill. That's a horrible waste of resources right there.
So Jeff, let's switch gears here and let you bring us up to date on some of the other things that we talked about the last time that we spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that since we were last together, you all have been involved with planting a bunch of chestnut trees. Would you tell us about that?
Oh yeah, we love that program. We're looking to secure funding so we can expand that in 2021 along with the other programs. But we did receive some funding, and part of it was through Patagonia Action Works as well as the Bonnaroo Fund to establish demonstration groves of the chestnut tree, the American chestnut, and the hybrid that's blight resistant. And so for educational purpose, to create some of those groves in state parks in Tennessee, and with signage so that people walk by and they can see these trees grow and learn a little bit more about the history of this heritage tree that was wiped out over the past 100 years plus because of a blight. And I hope you don't ask me to go into the science of the blight, but it's a fungus that destroys the tree after a certain age, which is about roughly 8 to 10 years, where the American chestnut, which was a very important tree for America as we built the country, essentially, that was wiped out and will no longer grow past 8 or 10 years. Thankfully, they're reproducing like crazy, well, because there's a seed bank, but they don't grow old enough to reproduce the seeds. And so that means they're going to die out over time. And so there's an effort to create a blight resistant chestnut that's 99.9% American. And it's partly crossbred with the Chinese chestnut that is resistant to that blight. Right. But that whole effort, we wanted to bring awareness to it. And because it's something we can do, it would be a great restoration success story if we can see those chestnuts restored. And so there are at Montgomery Bell State Park, there's a grove of trees, and Nathaniel Bedford Forest in West Tennessee, that state park, Panther Creek State Park as well. What's the other one up in Gallatin is Bledsoe Creek State Park.
Bledsoe Creek, right.
Yeah, so they're easily accessible to see these groves. If you can't find it, you can ask the park ranger, go to the office, and they can tell you how to visit our groves.
Jeff, we had an interview about 2 years ago with Tim Phelps at the Tennessee Forestry Division. We talk at length about the American chestnut and what's going on with that. And so this is really a cool project. And I think the trees that you're setting out are some of the early products of their crossbreeding program, and they have great hopes for some of those trees becoming viable and then maybe having nuts themselves that can be used for further planting. So
exactly, that's where we want to get. And you know what I heard, actually, we talked with one of the scientists over at the American Chestnut Foundation as we were rebuilding our program for next year, that they've actually discovered some American chestnuts that are reproducing in the wild now. They're very rare, but it's starting to happen, which is a miracle that it's possible that even along with all the scientific research to develop a blight-resistant hybrid, that nature might be, the trees might naturally find a resistance to that blight and now start reproducing. That would
Fantastic.
Be the best case scenario.
Now you and all we don't, have been, that was, go ahead.
Well, that's we don't know how widespread that is, but we did get some reports through the American Chestnut Foundation. Yeah.
Now you all have been involved with tree planting in the broader sense over the last couple of years as well. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, the Tennessee Tree Program was founded by the Tennessee Environmental Council in 2007 with a goal of planting 1 million trees, and there was no deadline on that because we want to set a high bar, but we also want to know we can achieve it. So over the past since I became part of the Tennessee Environmental Council, we've been working on how can we make that happen, and so we started creating a statewide tree planting event, and we call it Tennessee Tree Day now, which is endorsed by the state legislature, and just a way to get people involved in planting trees in their communities, no matter where you live. There's somewhere within eyesight you could plant a tree, and there are so many benefits to that, even just getting outside and digging in the ground. Getting one with nature for a few minutes while you plant that tree, but then you got decades of benefits from that tree as it grows. It's profound, the benefit to our planet from the trees. So Tennessee Tree Day is coming up on March 20th, 2021. And that's another program where we'll launch that for registration for folks in late December, right after Christmas. So people will be able to go online, select which trees you want. We try to provide a diverse array of native tree species for people to choose from. And then pick where you want to find out, decide where you want to plant your trees and get started that way.
Dynamite. Sounds like a great program. Now, the last one I want to just check in with you about is the composting program. And I think the last time you and I were on the air talking, that was the newest kid on the block in terms of programs mm-hmm. that you have. But tell us how that's going.
I love that. It's nice that we have a track record now where we can have this own timeline of where were you last time we did a podcast.
Exactly.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. And it is also really fun and rewarding to come up with new ways that people can get involved in their day-to-day life. Environmental volunteerism is not just going out to a mass tree planting event out there. It's what you do every day at home. And so we started a program that enables people to compost at home. And again, if you have your own property, if you own your land, then it's easier to start your own compost in your backyard. And by the way, I love that you do all these things already, Mark, with your gardens in your beautiful gardens in your backyard. But you know, like we throw away, the average Tennessean throws away some 9 pounds of food waste every week. And that's a lot of nutrients. We know we eat that food and there's scraps that we can't, you know, we cut off the end of the lettuce and we put it in the trash. The average Tennessean resident is doing that. But those are nutrients and that could break back down and be in our soils and helping other plants grow and the insects and bugs and the microbes for a healthier ecosystem. And so we encourage people to find a small area, just a few feet wide, three feet by three feet, and a little circle and make a compost pile, or you can get one of the pre-made compost bins and just put all your food scraps in there, all your kitchen scraps, not meat or dairy, preferably, because for just different reasons, there's nothing ecologically harmful about it, but it will attract critters and it could smell.
Right.
But yeah, composting all that food waste would keep an enormous amount of material away from our landfills, but regenerating our soils instead. And that's compost is another one of those terms that I just assume everybody knows because I've been composting since the 1980s in my backyard. But compost is basically, how do we even say it in layman's terms? It's when you put natural like leaves and apple cores and food scraps and anything natural or organic into a pile, vegetative material is a great word. It'll just naturally break down. Microbes will eat it, consume that stuff, it's probably more common where people like earthworms, where they eat that material and they poop it out, and it becomes a rich soil amendment, right? Well, essentially that's what happens when you compost. It turns from vegetative material back into what looks like soil. And you can put that in your gardens and it helps your veggies grow.
You know, Beth and I were talking about this the other day, and I noticed that that our neighborhood organization here at Hillsborough West End Neighbors has announced that they're going to have a composting pickup station here at the Trinity Presbyterian Church once a week for people to bring compostable materials and put them in a bin here. And I said to Beth, why in the world are they doing that? You know, people could be doing it in their backyards. Obviously, not everyone can do that in their backyard. And so that may be a reason. But I was thinking that, you know, many people have the disposals in their kitchen sink. And they dispose of this vegetative materials, as you talk about the tops of carrots and the potato peels and the apple cores and all those things that are part of day-to-day life. And where do they go when they go down into the sewer? Is to the sewage treatment plant. And that's 10 more pounds of material that the sewage treatment people have to process every year. And we already every day or every week, and they already are overloaded.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of overloaded, not to mention Middle Point Landfill in Murfreesboro, which is a massive, the highest land point in Murfreesboro, in Rutherford County, is a, well, I can't say for all of Rutherford County, but it's the largest ground feature in that area. It's a landfill where we bury our trash. It's filling up. It's almost at its capacity, which means why are we filling up valuable natural areas with stuff we could be reusing?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But it is important. I think community composting is another way that if every church had a little compost operation in its backyard property, that would give a lot more people that may not have a backyard to be able to put their scraps. And the other location, if you rent or you don't own your property, I would encourage you to get permission from your landowner to do it. But from your landlord, if you don't own your property, but there at all Metro's drop-off locations where you can recycle glass and other things that you cannot put in your curbside. A lot of those locations have compost drop-offs.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. And so that's another way that people can't, that it might be space constrained, could also participate. But community composting is something we support for that very reason.
Super.
But I'm with you, man. I just do it in my backyard because I get to walk it out there and dump it, and I get to see it turn into soil. It's magical. I mean, it doesn't happen in front of your eyes, but over the course of several weeks, you end up with soil at the end of the day.
We use that soil that is generated from that process and incorporated into our garden areas after a year or so sitting back there in the corner of the yard. And every now and then when you do that, you have some volunteer that occurs. So we've had squash and watermelons and other pumpkins just volunteer in the garden that are from the composting materials that didn't quite digest completely. The soils persisted or the seeds persisted and up comes a pumpkin.
Yeah, exactly. It is crazy. It's beautiful. That's nature at work.
It's a fun thing. Well, mm-hmm. Jeff, thank you for being with us today. I want to give you one opportunity here as we wind up to tell us again about how people can get in touch with the Tennessee Environmental Council, become a member, and learn about your various programs.
Thank you again for the opportunity, Mark. Go to our website, tectn.org. And if you do hear this podcast and want to reach me directly, it's jeff@tectn.org, J-E-F-F. And I'd love to hear from you and talk to you. But we have all the things we talk about today, the composting, the planting a tree, planting a pollinator garden, even learning better recycling practices, and other volunteer opportunities are all on our website. You can click through and become part of the solution that way. And we'd love to hear from you.
Super. Jeff Barry, thank you so much for joining us today. And I look forward to maybe having you on again in another year or 18 months or so.
Yes, we'll track our progress that way. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Hold on a second. There we go.